Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course, it's covered by the BIPCOT no government license. Cell 411, because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
Right on.
This is the Zombies Government and You podcast. We're going to subvert the state, make fun of it, have a couple beers while we do it. I'm David.
Yo, I'm Baron from the Wilberts.
Baron from the Lilberts.
If you say it that way, it sounds way too French and I so. I'm not a fan of the French, so.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a big fan of them. I don't know. I'm a fan of some of them. But not all. Not a big fan of French culture, I guess. I don't know. You know, I like wine, you know, I do enjoy wine now and then, but...
Well, that's true, but they had wine in other places then.
True. Oh, absolutely.
More than France.
Never been to a French restaurant, so I can't really say much about their cuisine. I guess crepes are cool, but...
Yeah. No, you can ask Jim, maybe next time you're on the Lorberts or whatever, ask him what my reaction was when we were walking through Paris. The Paris Casino.
Paris Casino. Is it just Paris or is it Paris? I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's just, I don't know. And I live here, so.
All right, well, I don't feel so bad.
No, so I was walking with like a permanent sneer on my face the entire fucking time.
It's a fun accent to make fun of, though. Sacre bleu. I don't think I have any listeners in France, so I don't think we're going to really alienate anybody right now.
even if we do, they don't like Americans, so fuck them. You know, whatever.
Word.
Right.
Sorry, I'm being very unprofessional eating my breakfast right now.
Yeah, whatever.
So, Baron, how was your weekend, man? What did you spend your time doing?
Well, I was trying to clean my house on Thursday. That didn't happen. And then Friday and Saturday, me and the family at my house, we all role play. We all played D&D. Just fucking hung out. And
D&D is for the uninitiated Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah.
Yeah. Old school. Yeah. None of this, you know, it's old school pen and paper, dice rolling, you know. The 80s stuff, or what was it? The 80s game that the conservative Christians warned everybody about.
It's a gateway to Satanism.
Yeah. Dude, and the comics and the really bad fucking movie Tom Hanks did, like one of his first movies was about that.
Oh, dude, I kind of remember that. I don't know if ever. I think I may have totally not watched it just because I knew it was that bad, because I don't think I've ever seen it.
No, I've never seen it, but okay, so back in the early 2000s, I used to work at a video store in Tucson, Arizona, and I remember seeing the cover almost.
What's a video store? Like some kids are going to be like, what's a video store?
Yeah, and the kids these days won't know what Blockbuster or Hollywood Video is.
Right. So, you know. Yeah, I took my kids there when they were younger, and I don't know, they've probably all but forgotten about it by now. So anyway, you were working near a store in Tucson.
In Tucson, that's Tucson. Right. Hell on earth, but you know.
And where are we going with the story, man? Dungeons and Dragons, right?
Yeah, D&D. Well, it's like you brought up in the before we start recording, you're talking about Dragonlance.
Yeah,
and the Dragonlance novels. We're talking, you know, the original. So there was the first three, the trilogy. The Dragons trilogy, Dragonman, Autumn Star, and the other two, which I don't recall.
It's like there's like seasonal or something, wasn't it? Like summer and winter.
Well, no, actually, there weren't. The first two was like autumn, and then may have been fall, but then they had compendium like after, because the original Dragonlance books were like were nine novels,
right?
And they were nine novels with a couple of side novels to kind of fill gaps. And then later on, they actually came out with another trilogy, which actually filled the gaps in between the original three novels, which was awesome.
Yeah, I love that series, man. I never got around to actually playing Dungeons and Dragons, but I loved reading that genre, especially the Dragonlance or Forgotten Realms with whatever that dark elf's name was, Dritzed something.
Drizzt.
Yeah, I never tried to actually say it. I just read it. But yeah,
you know.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to say the interesting thing about the original Dragonlance authors, which was Tracy Hickman and
Margaret Weiss or something.
Margaret Weiss. Yeah, exactly. Those were based off actual D&D characters. Everyone, like the main heroes, they role played them, and then the stories actually came out of the actual role playing sessions. But with R.A. Salvatore's Drizzt and everything, it was just a book. You know, it was what he decided to write. So I put more faith and more credence in the Dragonlance novels, because these were actually characters who were rolled up, who were, you know, the pen and paper characters, and they actually role played them.
Nice. Yeah. I wonder if there's been like a resurgence in D&D playing after Stranger Things came out, the Netflix series where they, you know, they start out playing D&D. So,
right.
That's kind of loosely based on, you know.
Well, there's a lot there in Stranger Things. There's a lot of the, influences. Mm-hmm. A lot of the 80s E.T., Goonies,
oh yeah,
whatnot. I mean, and yeah, D&D was a big thing in the 80s, and then I mean right now I think they've come out with like fifth edition, which I know nothing about, because we're still playing like old school first edition with some second edition weapons thrown in for flavor.
Mix it up, a little flavor.
Well, even with the hardcore, if you even ask the old school hardcore D&D fan, second ed was like a travesty. I mean, you had a very simplistic gaming system with like first ed, and then they went completely off the wall with second ed, and then it just kind of the later editions tried to kind of rebalance the entire game. But
cool, man. Well, I have to play a game with you sometime. I think basically it probably got pushed to the side by RPGs, which role-playing games. I mean, Dungeons & Dragons essentially is a role-playing game, or one of the first, yeah? But now right. You got all the RPGs on consoles or even your phones now or tablets. So.
Well, right. But D&D was basically the godfather of all this. I mean, you wouldn't have Final Fantasy or anything like that without D&D.
All right, right.
I mean, and hell, I'm playing right now. Have you ever heard of the Witcher series or the Witcher games?
Oh yeah, I've seen those. They look awesome, man. My buddy Kevin tells me to get them now that I finally got around to getting a PS4.
Oh, definitely pick up the Witcher 3. Now you won't necessarily need, because you know the three games are they're linked story wise, uh-huh. But you can actually play the Witcher 3. And kind of know what's going on without having played the other two. So the Witcher 3 can be... Witcher 3 is a standalone game, but it's also a sequel to, if anyone else who's played the previous games, you know, in the trilogy, so...
Oh, having some bad audio here. My garbage truck just pulled up. I don't know if you can hear it or not. It's a hate crime. Yeah, dude, I actually... shit, man. You mentioned Jim earlier. I was gonna ask him if he wanted to jump in on this one, but I didn't get around to it. So we'll have him on sometime soon. I think.
Yeah,
I know he records to you this day usually. So,
well, I don't know if he. I forget. He either records Mondays or Tuesdays with the Fiends. So, but generally around this time, he should be available.
Word. So, yeah, we're talking. We didn't really have a set topic. This thing, we're just kind of free forming it, man. We're gonna, like you said, you wanted to nerd out a little bit. I got no issue with that.
Well, that's it. Like the fantasy genre is my forte. It has been since I was a little kid. And as much as I've tried to, you know, I appreciate sci-fi and everything that's done. Like, I'm a real big Heinlein fan and the books he's put out.
Yeah.
I think it's quality sci-fi, especially libertarian, like quality libertarian sci-fi.
I remember, I've only read one of his books. I got Stranger, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, but I haven't really cracked into it yet.
Oh, but read that. You need to read that. I know. That book is fucking epic.
But I picked up in high school, I remember reading Stranger in a Strange Land, which was phenomenal, dude. Such a great book. Guy on Mars, you know, the Martian, he comes back to Earth, Michael Valentine or whatever.
Yeah, see, I have that book, but I haven't read it yet. But I'm a huge fan of Moon is a Harsh Mistress. Now, the issue is, in beginning that book, there's a lot of it's written in such an odd way that you really can't comprehend it reading like the first chapter or two. But as soon as you start getting into the book and the way that the main character on the moon speaks and his speech patterns and whatnot, you begin to pick it up and then becomes a lot easier to read.
Right on, man. I'll crack that one open again. I've got to get, I have to read more. I've been way too much, relying on my digital devices as of late.
Yeah. It's like, even, I mean, everyone, I remember there's a lot of millennials, whatever, I guess. Or how old are you?
I'm not a millennial. I was born in the late 70s. Okay. So I think I just missed it. So, well, yeah, that's weird too. That there's like that Gen X, and then
you are Gen X. Right. If you're late 70s, I mean, because I like the first year millennial is 82.
Right.
From what I've researched, and that's when I was born. Even though I feel more akin to Gen X, I'm technically considered a millennial.
You're an old soul. You're a year older. Your soul's a year older than your generation that you're born into,
I guess.
Yeah. Well, no, because for a while there was like that Generation Y or whatever.
Well, no, that generation got
folded away, or I don't know, you know, folded into the millennials, I guess.
Yeah, the Gen Y, which was, you know, there for a few years, it got folded in, and now they're just considered like the first gen millennial.
Right.
And then, well, the other millennials, which honestly is just horse shit. I'm an old man bitching about, you know, the young kids.
Get off of my lawn. Yeah.
We can talk about that later. So.
But yeah, so millennials are the demographic following Generation X. No precise dates.
Yeah. Well, it starts roughly around 82 till whatever's current. There is, from what I understand, there is a set date where millennial ends, and there's a next generation after that. Like
Star Trek, the next generation.
Yeah.
Millennials, the next generation.
Well, let me look at the trusty Google and see what comes up.
It says, okay, if you go to Wiki, it says Generation Y, and then parentheses, also known as millennials, is the demographic. Yeah, so they just basically changed it, I guess. Early 1980s is starting birth years, and mid-1990s to early 2000s is ending birth years.
Yeah. So anything post 2000 would probably be whatever the next, the next gen is.
Yeah. Talking about my generation.
But, okay, so real quick, let me filter back. Still talking about D&D. That Tom Hanks movie was called Mazes and Monsters.
Okay, yeah, okay, that sounds familiar now.
But I'm a little drunk. English is a difficult language when drunk, so I'd rather much watch the kids in Stranger Things. Yeah. No, I can speak German, but no. The kids in Stranger Things playing D&D and doing their thing than watching anything anti-D&D from the 80s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Tom Hanks and Mazes and Monsters.
Yeah, right.
Who said Tom Hanks has never made a bad movie? No, I'm just kidding.
The first Tom Hanks movie I remember ever watching was Big, and I still love that movie to this day.
That's a great movie. Yeah,
it is a great movie.
Dude, I mean, he's been prolific, man. You can't. I mean, You can't, they can't all be hits, you know?
Well, no, and that's true. And nowadays, like, there, his biopic on IMDb, he's still looking good, but I've seen some, like, probably later pics of him. He's, like, looking pretty, he's looking old. I mean,
yeah.
Our heroes that we grew up with are old. Like, I mean, on Facebook today, no one blew up my phone because I don't think anyone I know really cares, but Bill Paxton died.
Yeah, I saw that, man. That was a bummer. I mean,
that's just life. People live, people die.
Exactly.
And, you know, just because this guy just so happened to be in a ton of movies that people liked, you know, is the reason why.
Aliens, yeah.
Terminator. Yeah.
I remember seeing a meme where he was like, he was like one of the only actors that got killed in like the Predator, Terminator, and Aliens, or, you know, one of the big three, like, 80s sci-fi trilogies or movies.
Well, okay. So I had my cowork, my buddy Scott at work. He said the same thing. I'm like, all right, find me. I remember him in Aliens. Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't remember him in Terminator, and I didn't know if he was in Predator. So I was looking for evidence that he was actually in all three to verify the meme.
Yeah. Because you got to check your meme, yo.
Oh, never mind. He was in Predator 2.
Predator 2. Okay, yeah, that's probably why not many people saw that.
No, Predator 2 was actually good in its own 90s way. But yeah, no, okay, now I remember.
He was in the city, right? And Danny Glover?
Correct. It was a good, you know, even though it had a lot of 90s camp, it still had some really good moments. And
still,
I remember.
It's still the Predator. You're still going to want to watch it just to see the freaking Predator, so.
It was kind of weak, but then you had the old fucking what was it, the voodoo guy, the voodoo priest in the back alley. You know, there's some memorable moments. Yeah. From it.
So yeah, I guess, and then Aliens. Obviously, he was a Marine.
He was Hick.
Yeah,
Hick. Yeah, he was
Hicks.
Hick. Or whatever. No, he was Hudson.
Hudson.
Sorry.
I can't. Yeah.
I thought that was I thought it was Hicks too, but I'm like, nah, no. Terminator. Oh, he was a non-accredited punk leader in Terminator.
He was like one of the gang. Wait, you know, punk gangs.
Was he one of the? Okay, so the beginning of the Terminator, when Arnold goes to Earth, and that first group, he talks about, "Give me your clothes" or whatever.
Yeah,
I wonder if that was him.
Probably. Yeah. Well, sucks, man.
Well, it's
he was an enjoyable actor. You know, I don't know.
I saw someone, I saw someone say, rest in peace, Bill Paxton, and they had a picture of Bill Pullman.
Yeah. I think that was like a joke meme, right?
Well,
like,
no, it is.
Jeremy H word.
What, Heisenagler?
Yeah. God, such a crazy last name. It's rad, though.
Dude, it's German.
I never would have guessed.
It's either German or Austrian or a German-speaking country.
Yeah, somewhere in that region. No, that was great. Yeah, it was Bill Pullman. He looked a little. Dude, you're right. They are all getting old, man. It's crazy.
Well, no. It's what's funny was it's like I said that I told my coworker, I told him of the meme, and then he's just like, you know, what are you talking? And then a couple minutes later, he's like, you know, Bill Pullman died. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Bill Pullman's alive. It's Bill Paxton you're referring to. He's like, oh my god, I can't believe I just did that.
After
spending half an hour of my of lunchtime looking up Bill Paxton, I completely fucked that up. It was funny to me.
That is funny. You know, I saw. Leave it to Michael W. Dean. He found out probably somewhere that Bill Paxton was actually, as a boy, a young boy, was actually present when JFK was assassinated. I guess he was like, you know, at the parade or whatever.
Oh, no shit, in Dallas?
Yeah, I remember reading. Or I saw that Michael said that. I didn't actually go verify it, but I trust his source. I trust him.
No, it's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's kind of crazy because you kind of like a scope of his life. So.
Oh, shit. He was also... Well, yeah, I'm looking at his filmography right now. He was in Apollo... Let's look at, like, big movies. Apollo 13.
Right.
Before that, Tombstone.
Yeah, great movie.
He was in Titanic. I mean, I'm...
Oh, yeah, just, he was like the submarine guy.
Yeah. Look, just looking at his filmography, I'm like, I remember him as Hudson, and that's it. But yet, his filmography suggests he was in a hell of a lot
more.
Oh, I remember. Oh, he was in Navy SEALs. I remember seeing the cover for
the one with Charlie Sheen, like the 80s one or whatever.
Or then, 90s. Yeah, 1990. But I remember as a kid, I actually wanted to be a Navy SEAL. And then I saw that cover and that kind of, you know, solidified it, even though I never went in the military.
Yeah.
Afterwards. I mean, that was like, what was I, 7, 8? No, I was 8 when that came out. So, yeah.
Yeah, growing up, I don't want to say I never wanted to be in the military. I probably did when I was younger. You know, I had all the G.I. Joes and all that stuff that's supposed to, you know, acclimate you to that. But it was a big thing with my dad. I was going to be in the Army, you know, when I was 18. He was going to drive me down there and, you know, enlist me, sign me up. And I was like, nope, not doing it, you know, because I don't like being told what to do pretty much, you know.
Well,
like what Johnny Cash said, he's like, you put the screws on me, I'm going to screw right from under you. I think that's, you know, that's just kind of how I was. And I was, you know. Totally against it. I was skateboarding and, you know, listening to punk. And actually, I wrote one of my senior English class. I wrote a paper on Edward Abbey's the Lonesome Cowboy or whatever, about why government was and my thesis was government was the greatest obstacle to freedom. So yeah, that one got me a little bit of trouble with the old man. But yeah, that's where I was at. And then I thought about it later, you know, I actually came close to signing up a couple times when I was in my early, you know, when I was around 30 or something, but going into the guard at least or something, but I never did it. So thankfully. So yeah, there you go. Never was a Navy SEAL, but I almost joined the war machine.
I never even got that far because by the time I actually became more aware, I just say what life, maybe around 15, 16, or no, mm-hmm. So 15, roughly, I think I had a pretty sheltered Mormon-esque life to a certain extent up until 15. Then my father passed away and ended up moving to southern Utah. But even after that, once he had passed, that's when like the whole psychological issues began with the anti-authority, you know, anti-authoritarian. So at that point, I think around 17 is where I just completely went from, okay, I would follow, if my dad told me something, I would follow it, to the complete opposite. I'm like, no, fuck you. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And then it's just been that way since then. And there's been ups and downs and yeah, it is what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah.
What? We're just talking about our times potentially almost endangering ourselves in the great war machine that will never end.
Correct. We could have been Hudson, man. Could have been a space marine, colonial marine.
But dude,
we'll never know now.
You know, and to be honest, nowadays, because I've taken some, when I was attending the University of Arizona, I actually took some ROTC classes because, you know, I'm not, you know, 100%, and I won't say 100% individualist because that's not true, but I like to see both sides. And because I would much rather be armed with the knowledge of how to run a potential squad in, say, like a survival type scenario, you know. So I took the classes more for personal, you know, personal development, you know, just to see, because let's be honest. How many of those people who are saying, you know, fuck the state, I'm going to live my life in the own way, could actually get along and actually cooperate with a group of people in a squad type situation if their life depended on it?
That's hard to say. It's hard to quantify. I mean, it is hard. You do have, I think it's interesting. I think you do see more and more veterans, I mean, or people who have been enlisted or served, coming to liberty. I mean, if you look at Ron Paul, you know, I mean, yeah, he was a politician and a statist, but he was the best one, and he had a large amount of support from the military. And you see things like what is that, Veteran Anarchy on? I think they have like a Facebook thing, and they do some Facebook streaming stuff and a website. And I don't want to bring him up, but people like obviously like Kokesh, who served and are now kind of, you know, opposite direction, I guess.
There is another gentleman who I met off the Lou Rockwell site, because he actually ended up posting an article on Lou Rockwell years ago. His name, I believe it's Christian Light. And I was friends with him at Facebook at one point until I actually ended up canceling my account, losing, you know, all the friends I'd made up, you know, till probably about 2013. But my statement was not directed at them. It's directed at the people who are like the keyboard cowboys or the keyboard warriors.
Of
the libertarian movement, who say, well, I'm going to defend this, you know, get the guns, whatever. Okay, you can do that. But do you know how to actually work in a group in a survival type scenario to actually prosper?
Yeah. And that was one of my gripes with Walking Dead, I guess. So let's tie back into the show title here. You have all these people who the problem with that is that when you have a bunch of people running around with rifles that aren't trained, you don't have a team or a squad or whatever. You have a bunch of individuals running around with guns, and they're more likely to hurt themselves or others because of their lack of training or you know what I mean? Yeah. This is something that you have to do before the Schumer hits the fan, you know, before the zombies show up or whatever. This is something that, you know, you have to do some research on and spend some time and, you know, yeah, find and develop a group of like-minded individuals and work together. And if you don't do that, you're going to be way behind the curve of people who already have. So, yeah, if you're talking about just in general, you know, community defense or, you know, just setting up your own kind of self-defense group in case something, you know, goes south in the economy or there, you know, God forbid there's some kind of, you know, basically life-disrupting event, society-disrupting event. Yeah, that's something you have to do ahead of time because the learning curve is going to be pretty dang steep when when it's actually going on.
I agree. And for that reason, this is why I decided to take the ROTC courses. And in going in ROTC, there's going to be very few civilians there. But I was one of the few. And it just so happened, I don't know how the fuck it did happen. But the first, it was a major that had the class. And he left. He went back to Camp Pendleton for more, for whatever he was doing. Mm-hmm. Then we had a captain. In either case, I was a favorite of the major, and then I was really liked by the captain after he came on, because he just watched the interactions between me, the group, and the major / professor, if you will. And I don't know, I really enjoyed my time, you know, even though I wasn't military prepared or come from a military background, I really did enjoy my time attending the ROTC classes.
Yeah, and there's no shortage of, you know, people who have prior service or experience, like coming and teaching, setting up their own business and teaching these skills to, you know, I guess civilians is the word you would use. You know, they're out there. There are groups out there that are actually, that's what they do, you know. And you can go sign up and run around with your AR-15 and learn some stuff. And it's not cheap, you know, if you want good training. It's not cheap, but it's fun, you know. It can be fun.
Oh, and it's fun, and it's a worthy skill to maintain. It really is, in my opinion. There is, if any of your listeners out there are familiar with Bill Buport and mm-hmm. the Zero Gov blog that he puts out. I mean, even in this forum page, there is a lot of emphasis on being your own rifleman or being trained a certain way in order to protect yourself and as well as your family. Because if you're an untrained peon, basically just kind of waving a pistol around, you're a danger to yourself, you're a danger to a family, yeah, and there's a good chance that you would be taken out by a slightly more disciplined or trained opponent.
Yeah, well, let's tell you, there's a Heinlein quote that I always liked. Tie it back into that sci-fi book. It's a specialization is for insects, basically. It says a human being should be able to change a diaper, plan an invasion, butcher a hog, con a ship, design a building, write a sonnet, balance accounts, build a wall. Not that wall. Set a bone, comfort the dying, take orders, give orders, cooperate, act alone, solve equations, analyze a new problem, pitch manure, program a computer. Looking at you, Jim. Cook a tasty meal, fight efficiently, die gallantly. Specialization is for insects. Robert A. Heinlein. So, yeah, you should be learning how to plan an invasion and die gallantly, right? No, but you brought up Bill Buport, and even before when I was more of a men statist or minarchist, I got exposed to him before any real other libertarian things through some, you know, preparedness type websites, and I found Zero Gov that way, and then, you know, I heard him on The Fiends, which that was great, you know, so it kind of closed that loop. But yeah, dude, he's a military or former military officer, and he totally advocates, you know, a lot of that stuff. You know, being prepared, situationally aware. Obviously, you know, that kind of, you know, training up to that level. You know, so that's something you should definitely check out if you're interested out there.
Yeah, and his website is zerogov.com.
Right.
And it's just a blog post.
I'll put it in the liner notes.
Liner notes.
But yeah, my CD. When I put the CD out of the show or the record out. Yeah, the show notes, sorry.
Yeah, so when I drop the record for this show, you know.
Yeah. Hey, you're drunk. I'm waking up, man. So, you know. The fact that we're like shuffling along as well as we are, that's pretty good, I think.
Absolutely. For what I'm saying is, so... when I first got into whatever you want to call this liberty movement, liberty community, whatever.
Yeah.
I started off with The Fiends because I found out about Brett Benatt's podcast, the School Sucks podcast, first. And so I started listening to that before anything else. It was probably one of the first podcasts I started listening to. Mm-hmm. Then I came across the interview he did with Michael Dean way back in the day. And then I'm like, oh, so this is, you know, interesting. I was working at Sprouts at the time, working overnight as a grocery stocker. So we were able to list, you know, just plug in headphones and just, you know, waste a day away doing work.
That's great.
So I catched up, you know, there was the Bitcoin Lawyer, which is now a defunct podcast. I was listening to, the School Sucks podcast, which then turned me on to the Freedom Fiends because the interview that Michael did with Brett, and then in turn that actually turned me on to Ben Stone and Bill Buport.
Nice.
Because of the work they did with the Fiends early or post NEMA, but when Michael was after Michael was doing his Anarchy Gumbo, as doing the Fiends more.
Yeah, I never heard Anarchy Gumbo, man.
More months, more mainstream. Oh, it is. The Anarchy Gumbo page, I believe, is still up.
I'll have to check that out.
If people want to check it out, it's anarchygumbo.com. And I believe Michael W. Dean still has the few podcasts that he recorded from that. If not, you may be people may be able to find it out.
I bet someone's torrenting it somewhere.
Well, I'm torrenting. I actually have not all the current feeds, but I have every Bad Quaker episode on my server in case it ever goes down. There's going to be a link, probably multiple links, in order for the Bad Quaker podcast to be.
Yeah, there. Dude, I love the Bad Quaker show, man. I miss it, and I miss hearing them on the Fiends. But yeah, that's a great one to listen.
Ben Stone is a great person, and okay. So my main point in discussing all this is I started listening to the Fiends, but then I really started paying attention to Ben Stone, Bill Buper. Then you start kind of going into their direction. I mean, they're OG libertarians, at least from my point of view. Fucking straight up OG.
Right.
Like, you know, none of this fluffy fucking, you know, unicorn, we are the world type shit. They're like, you know what? If you want to be free, you need to learn to keep yours, arm yourself, you know, defend yourself, regardless. And so when it comes to, because in my mind, I may be proven wrong or someone can tell me that I'm wrong, but in my mind, there is a split. You have these fluffy other libertarians. You can consider Kokesh, Cantwell. Ugh. All the other.
I don't consider them libertarians anymore. But
well,
so libertarians, right?
They may not be, but they're libertarians in a way because of what they've done in the past. You have them, but then you've got the OG who are really straight up like, no, this is what you need to do. And I consider Ben Stone, Bill Buper, and a few others. Boston Tea Party, mm-hmm. Michael W. Dean. They're all fucking old school, and they come from an old school type philosophy, regardless how they got there. But they're saying they have a more realistic message, and I adhere more. If I were to say that I liked, they're not celebritarians, but if they were to be put in a celebritarian category, I would put these OG men far above whatever the fuck's out there now. Tucker, you know.
Absolutely. And
anybody else. Because they're more grounded in reality, whereas these other people more grounded in philosophy.
Yeah.
And well,
you know, you have to have the philosophy. And I think especially Ben Stone and Bill Buper can do that philosophical side of it very well, and they do. But they also, like you said, especially I think with Bill Buper and his philosophy of Stoicism, he grounds it and his understanding of history and basically human nature, you know, human nature and all that. Yeah, they do kind of have a more grounded or realistic, I think, like you said. You need that philosophical side of it, but at the same time, it's like when the rubber meets the road, you know, what are you going to, this is how it's going to, you need people that are kind of looking at it that way, I think. So that's what, yeah, like you said, that's what you get more from Ben and Bill and definitely Michael and, yeah, not so much Tucker and these guys, but.
No, and someone else that I do have to add in there that's an OG, even from Michael W. Dean standards, Claire Wolf.
Claire Wolf, yeah.
Claire Wolf's fucking awesome. But I do have one question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we this goes out to the entire community of people who listen to this podcast and could comment. And, you know, I open this question out to everyone. Whatever generation of libertarian warriors or whatever have you, you know, we're talking about Tucker, we're talking about, you know, other people, Mises Institute or whatever. Do you think they're too utopian in their ideals? Meaning, I mean that, you know, how a lot of libertarians like to make fun of liberals, like, you know, the unicorns and all that shit. I mean, you know, the magic of government. Special and whatnot.
Snowflakes, yeah.
Right. Well, I'm not talking about special snowflakes.
Yeah, the rainbows.
Because, right, rainbows. But believe in some utopian ideology, regardless, that something magical is going to happen. Do you or the listeners or viewers or whatever also believe that is possible or extremely likely even within the libertarian community? Because I myself absolutely believe it. Way too many idealists out there and not enough people grounded in reality.
No, I mean, I think that's a fair observation or a, you know, an astute
assessment.
Assessment. Thank you. Yeah.
Because regardless,
I don't think the philosophy itself is utopian. I don't think libertarianism or whether you're an abolitionist or an anarcho-capitalist, I don't think that's necessarily or inherently a utopian belief. I think somehow belief that, you know, you can create a monopolistic corporation like government and expect it to limit itself or, you know, not commit abuses and atrocities, that's a real utopian belief. And obviously liberals are extremely guilty of that, but so are people on the right. You know, they just want their— I saw that today, like Trump wanted to, or the Republican Congress wants to cut the EPA, which is great, cut the State Department, that's great, but they want to increase spending at in the Pentagon. So there you go, you know what I mean? They're just shuffling the money around and shoving it over to their socialist programs, you know, the military, the cops, whatever. So I get what you're saying. Like, there is a little bit of, I don't want to say mental— it's a lot of mental exercises or a lot of hypotheticals, you know?
No. It's not that. There's a lot of mental masturbation going around.
I almost said that, so... Yeah,
what I'm saying is this, because those within the movement, because what business, what legitimate, you know, brick and mortar or business has Jeffrey Tucker run? Has like these other celebritarians or prominent libertarians run? People say these ideas are great, you know, and they work. They work on paper. Well, I've heard a lot of arguments from people, period, that communism worked on paper, but yet failed in practice.
Good in theory, right?
Yeah, it's good in theory. So if ANCAPistan or the anarcho-capitalist whatever theory, is it just a good theory on paper, or can it be applied practically?
I think it could be. You know, obviously it's not going to be perfect ever, you know, because utopia will never exist. But the thing is that, you know, it is the most consistent, I think, philosophy, the philosophy that's most consistent with liberty and giving people choice and having as close to a free market as you could ever have, and have it so that people can, you know, do voluntary exchange and the bad actors will get, you know, sorted out or whatever. Yeah, it's never going to be perfect. I think the biggest problem is that the state endures because people need security. You know, I think that's the main function of what the state provides. And for whatever reason, people have been ingrained to believe that security can't come from anywhere else. You know, it has to come from either a government or a city state or a nation state or what have you, instead of from building up yourself. Like I said, go get some training, you know, whatever. Contracting with voluntary protection services, you know, that would be a lot more responsive to market forces and consumer demand than a government maintain monopoly on the use of violence, aka law enforcement. So yeah, is it ever going to be perfect? Obviously not. You know, this is not utopian at all, in my opinion. But yeah, is there a lot of like kind of mental flagellation or masturbation or exercises? Sure. You know.
Well, here but yet libertarians even or anarcho-capitalists suffer from huge cognitive dissonance. And let me just tell you, because you are absolutely fucking wrong.
You are about
the market fucking working. The market will not work when people are blinded by their own ideology. Case in point, Jeff Berwick is now known to be a flat out fucking scam artist.
And Arcapulco is going on right now too. So yeah.
Well, and that's fucking great. Fuck them.
Exactly.
Adam Kokesh has been proven to be a fucking scam artist.
Allegedly. No.
Yeah. Allegedly my ass. But yet,
franchise fees for protests, right?
But yet you're talking about the market actually willing to punish those who do wrong. But yet the market of anarcho-capitalists out there are willing to move or completely disregard that and still support. I mean, Tony Styles. So Tony Styles, Jeff Berwick,
yeah.
Adam Kokesh,
no,
all proven to be serial fraudsters. But yet ANCAPs are willing to completely disregard that and support them. Anarcho-Poco, from what I've heard, even though Jeff Berwick technically, allegedly, is only the figurehead, he is still involved. And yet people will go there and they will fucking want to ass fuck him for recognition. Period. This is why you cannot.
Yeah.
This, among other reasons, is why anarcho-capitalists and any type of libertarians will get raked through the fucking mud by the media, even by the alt-right, because they're so goddamn easy targets because they are not consistent. Period. They say they're consistent. They never are, especially when it comes to people in their own fucking circle.
Well, obviously there is definitely segments of the whatever ANCAP community or the libertarian community that continue to support these guys. And yeah, that's a problem. But that's interesting too, man. It's, like I said, it's never going to be perfect. You're always going to have people who the scum will always, rise to the top. But it is interesting that you people still knowing all these things, choose to kind of hitch their wagon to them instead of, kind of shunning them and I think that's unique, not unique, but it's been mentioned before that liberty or libertarians are kind of an attractive market for scammers or people like this because they are reticent or reluctant to call the cops or get the state involved when people are shady and scam people like Berwick has or whatever, So that, that's part of the problem too, is if the state wasn't there, how would you address, these people or shun them or whatever? It's frustrating, man. I get it.
It's beyond frustrating now. It's now a permanent type thing. So you see these people who say they are or they believe themselves to be consistent on their principles, but yet they give certain individuals free passes. But yet they will say that, none of this violates the NAP, this and that. And you know what? There's a lot
NAP.
Right. And I've heard a lot of talk from a few individuals about vigilante justice. Well, if someone were to go and maybe fuck Berwick up or maybe take out Kokesh's leg or whatever.
Allegedly.
from a vigilante standpoint, they have every fucking right. Hell, if they're one of the people that fucking Berwick defrauded, you fucking take his life. That's probably, what's a life worth? Realistically, what's a life worth in Afghanistan? You have, can you quantify an actual life?
Well, I think that's part of the problem too, is that the system of justice has been so perverted to where, if you are a fraud, and I'm not advocating violence against anybody, although it would certainly be tempting. I could see how somebody was cheated out of their life savings. It's a fine line, it's caveat emptor, buyer beware.
But at the same time, when
fraud's been committed, how do you proceed? And the government there gets in there, justice system gets in there, and it totally perverts it. All these people who are convicted, there's little to no restitution made to the victims.
No.
They're incarcerated.
This is where you're wrong, because flat out there is apparently a supposed justice system within ANCAPs that is completely separate from the government justice. So therefore, what does the ANCAP justice look like? What do these so-called private courts and everything that Murray Rothbard and all these other people talked about? Are they employed? What is the result of said employment? You cannot, when you're talking about, when we're talking about libertarians, when we're talking about ANCAPs, you cannot say the justice system, because that is the government system.
Well, I'm talking about the current justice system. I'm saying how it does pervert restitution or actual justice being made against people who are bad actors, who do act in bad faith, like some of the ones you mentioned.
Are ANCAPs above this justice system, as so they claim? If they are, what type of justice system do they want to implement? Because there is no proof whatsoever. There may be writing. There may be say, oh, well, private courts, this and that. Well, where is that? Where are the private courts deliberating or potentially convicting so-called fraudsters? It doesn't exist.
Well, you can't have it because the government has a monopoly on it.
No, absolutely not. You can have it behind closed doors. But everything ANCAPs do, if they were to do it from a justice perspective, would be vigilante justice. Because it is outside the system's purview, the system's vision. So, okay, we have that. We would have these vigilante courts. Why aren't the courts doing anything? Whether or not the courts would redeem so-called fraudsters or actually punish them. The actual idea of a court system in ANCAPistan or any libertarian thought is a fucking pipe dream, because no one is willing to step up to do the dirty work. And that is deliberating and deciding a person's fate privately.
Yeah, I think that kind of goes back to like Bill Buperts talked about, the committees of vigilance. You had groups of private citizens that formed to administer law and order, when the government failed them, which isn't, it kind of has a bad connotation, because government indoctrination, how would you do that? That's a great question, man. And that's part of that debate or that.
No, it's not a debate. It's a null point, because no major person within the libertarian community is bringing it up, with the exception of Bill Buperts and Ben Stone. Those are the only two people who have even tried to throw out the idea out for public consumption. Otherwise, talk to Jeff Tucker, talk to any of these other people from Mises or ex from Mises. You ask them, how is this settled, and why is it not being settled within our own community? Because you have to practice what you preach, and I'm not seeing any practicing whatsoever. And this is why ultimately the alt-right has made libertarianism and anarcho-capitalists their fucking whipping boys, because they do not practice what they preach. They may bitch and wax philosophical on Facebook, but that's about it.
Okay, so what do you propose then?
What's
your solution?
What's my solution? No. As the what is it? President, the idea is to get people to act. People want to say criticism is the best form of argument or whatever, especially against the government. Okay, use criticism, use jokes, whatever, but we need to start looking at our own people and doing and actually holding people accountable and doing something. There was no accountability in fucking the ANCAP community.
Well,
none
whatsoever. I think I don't know if people are just scared to call people out sometimes, but that's the whole reputation and shaming system. That's where that's supposed to.
But that doesn't work.
And it works. Work. It's worked to varying degrees, but yeah, is it completely, successful?
No.
Obviously not. But
the whole argument for shaming is complete bullshit. Because if shaming worked, because you're always going to have fanboys. There will always be fanboys who will prop up their god. Berwick, Kokesh, not Cantwell anymore.
Yeah, no.
Tucker. There will always be fucking fanboys. So what's your shaming going to do to them? It's just going to make them bitch louder, become more vocal, defending their deity.
No, it's frustrating, man. It is frustrating to see these people kind of keep glamming on to, you know, the movement and milking it and I don't want to say, I don't want to say the movement because that sounds really collectivist, but the community or liberty, whatever. It is, dude, I get it. It's completely frustrating. I just cringe whenever I see Berwick pop up on a podcast or YouTube or, you know, anything. I'm just like, oh God, you know, why is this guy still around? They're almost like, you know, they're almost like politicians of the liberty, whatever community, you know. It's like, you know, they're corrupt, you know, they're horrible, but for some reason people still keep electing them, you know, or supporting them. I don't know.
So how do you use it?
It's
and you using I think, that
I think
analogy.
I think I saw something the other day that might explain it. Robert Higgs said something on Facebook. He said, "You consider that half the people or half the population has an IQ under 100, and a lot of this starts to make more sense." So I don't know. Maybe that's the case.
Well,
or
you
what.
Know, that's generalizing. And
no, I know, but it's.
I would say that's completely
bullshit. It's as good an explanation as any right now.
But yet. Look at the system in which we're look. I mean, the libertarian system. Okay, you basically said that people are continuing to act as voters would in a two-party system. So therefore, that in my mind, that makes libertarians just as bad, if not worse, than the current system, because they're not willing to turn on principle. They're wanting to back their candidate because their candidate sounds nice.
I think more and more people are turning away from them. Yeah, it might be a slow process, but I think you're starting to see them kind of get pushed to the margin. Is it happening soon enough or vocally or vociferously enough? No, you know. I think a lot of people, like you said, they justify it or compromise their principles. They say, yeah, you know, they did this wrong, but they're helping spread the message of liberty to more people. You know, you hear a lot about that with, like, you know, Kokesh or whatever. So it's kind of like a just, you know, they are willing to overlook all the bad stuff because liberty, you know, is
well,
getting
right.
spread.
But is it really liberty or is it just a false pretense?
Well, of course it is. It's totally a false pretense. But I'm saying I think that's the mental leap that a lot of these people, either they're completely – you know, a lot of them may be newly minted, you know, libertarians or whatever. They may not be totally aware. They may have just,
you know, found even at this
and down the line, they, you know, they learn more and more and they're like, whoa, I got to distance myself away from this guy. So, you know, they got to keep churning. Churning up new people to support.
What are the chances of a newly minted libertarian actually examining their own beliefs and not see their own examine their own beliefs and see their own bias, especially what's being turned out today from college or from public education and college education? You really think that a lot of these libertarians are going to self-examine themselves?
No, I'm talking about, you know, them, why they're following these people who are bad actors. Essentially, they may not. They're newly minted libertarians. They may not be fully aware of the whole history of these people. They just stumbled upon them and said, "Oh, I like this message," you know. And then, of course, you're going to have the useful idiots who are going to follow them no matter what. And I don't know what you can do about them, but I think more and more that they're called out and ostracized and marginalized, the better. Yeah, is it ideal? Is it no? Is it take a long time? Yeah, but it also gives you a lot of opportunity to make fun of them, which is great too. But
well, right, okay. So that brings us back. Now we've kind of come back full circle in terms of tribalism, because tribalism, as much as libertarians want to exist or want to say it, you know, is bad. It is human fucking nature, and we can see that amongst the fans or the supporters of said celebritarians, period. Because even it's tribalism. Their tribe, which they believe to their flavor of liberty, is still a fucking tribe. So everyone, regardless of political leanings, engage in tribalism to a certain extent, which is why I fully believe that the word tribalism needs to be defined from whatever it's being used, as opposed to, or defined specifically in the term it's being, or in the way it's being used, as opposed to what the standard quote unquote Facebook libertarian would define tribalism. Because the only way they see tribalism is they see political groups, red and blue, Republican, Democrat. That's all they fucking
Kokesh.
See.
Kokesh Berwick. Whatever.
Right. That is tribalism in and of itself. Who's willing to admit that, though?
Well, I mean, I think there are aspects of tribalism that, you know, if you're an individualist, which obviously most libertarians are, or at least believe in, you know, the freedom, you know, there is kind of a problem with traditional tribalism. Yes, you know, because there's a lot of conformity in it, and, you know, a lot of, false divisions, you know, potentially. So, you know, it's not something that you should totally discount, but...
Would you agree? Let me ask a question. Would you agree that the idea of fighting for freedom is a point of tribalism? Because you're willing to conform to a certain set of ways, whether it be state control versus freedom, or I would say freedom versus just control as a whole. Either way, even if you're for freedom, absolute freedom, or whatever you define as freedom, but you seek others out, you are seeking a tribe of people who would advocate the same idea. Tribalism in of itself is not a negative word. It is meaning that you are surrounding yourself, or you go and define yourself by a set group of ideas, whether it be pro-freedom, pro-state, regardless.
Yeah, I'm just reading I'm reading a little definition here. I think, yeah, it is how it's defined, you know.
Well, right. So you see these libertarians saying they're anti-tribalism, but yet they practice tribalism their own way. It's still tribalism.
I think the danger, or the what people don't like, is that you are going to adhere to the tribe over, and that's what you're seeing with Berwick and all these guys. They adhere to the tribe or the groupthink over principle. You know what I mean? So what do you do when your principles or morals come into conflict with the tribe? You know, how do you reconcile that?
Well,
I think that's kind of like what I see as kind of the main.
Well, let me ask you this: do you? Because I'll ask you this pointedly, and then maybe the listeners can decide. Do you feel
all 10 of them.
That?
Sorry, go on.
We will slowly grow the listener base. That is the goal. But do you feel that
the tribe? You mean? Sorry.
Yeah. It's going to be the tribe or whatever the fuck you want to call it. But right. Okay. Do you believe that your family values are important?
Of course.
Okay. So therefore, family values would encompass your tribe, which you may consider, and it's up, and this is ultimately what it is. It's the individual, what the individual considers their tribe. It could be a group of people of like-minded. I mean, whatever the fuck you want to define it as, it is there. That is your tribe. Your tribe right now consists of your family, which is what? You, your wife, your how many daughter or how many kids do you have?
I got a few kids that I know of. There might be some I don't know about. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, and I got some cats.
Well, okay, yeah, so. That's cats, if you value them as family, that's part of your tribe too. Your tribe is your family sect, your family clan.
Yeah, and it branches out to, you know, other relatives and friends of family, or, you know, friends.
Well, right. So you can interchange tribe, which is more the a literal sense, versus clan. And clan, you know, clans are very distinct. They have their own ways, their own cultural values and whatnot. That's all it is. That is all it fucking is. Like, let's say, okay, right now in Las Vegas, I have in my libertarian tribe, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 people who I've considered part of the tribe. Jim Jesus, Jeff Vent, I mean, Vince, and 2 other people who I've met, Kingsley Edwards. You know, these people, because they adhere to a certain form of beliefs or a certain culture, are now part of my tribe, and I view it as such.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is the tribe, or it's obviously played a huge part in human development or whatever. Look at human, you can't survive on your own. Human, you know, humans are social animals by nature. You know what I mean? So you have to have, like you said, like an extended group. You know, you can't just be an individualist all by yourself. So yeah, you're right. How does tribalism play into that in regards to liberty and these bad actors?
Okay, so, well, I can get the point out now.
And you brought that up, clan, too. That's an interesting distinction. I'm pretty sure I read something about, I think Bill Buper may have been talking about that.
Okay, so clans.
I got to go back and read more of him.
A tribe is more of a, let's say, a worldwide phenomenon because there are tribes in Africa and whatnot. But a clan, at least from my understanding, is a very specific familiar group in West Europe, period. And so since I have come from the West European stock of, let's see, German, Danish, Welsh, English, you know, that's the terminology I use. The familial unit that I have in my house right now, it's a clan structure. We have, you know, it is what it is. We have all agreed upon the definition, and that's it. You know, this is family by bond as opposed to by blood. But even if it's by blood or by bond, there is still the clan aspect for Western Europeans. And then others, you know, if they were, say, Pakistani, Indian, what, you know, South Korean, whatever, that, you know, they may see a tribal aspect, a tribe, but.
Yeah. No, I get it, man. I think I'd rather see, you know, you define your clan or your tribe by free association, who you choose to associate with, rather than, you know, tradition or ancestry or what have you.
Well, no, but even by tradition, but tradition is a very important thing, because you as a whole, say the clan as a whole, can value tradition and what tradition brings, and yet have that individualistic aspect, because everyone brings their own thing to the tribe/clan. Now, for mine specifically, it is modeled. Once I really started analyzing it, because I didn't ask anybody, it's really modeled after the Sicilian mafia. In as which it is saying that, yeah, and it's all voluntarily. You can leave anytime you want, but
from the mafia.
Well,
I don't know about that. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, but this, it is saying, you know, family is important. If you wish to be a part of said family, you are in until either you die or you decide to get out, period. Other than that, we will go to bat for you. We will fight for you. We will kill for you, regardless. This is the family.
That's the kind of part that troubles me is, you know, will you kill for them or do all these things for them, right or wrong? You know what I mean? Where does principle or morality enter into that? So that's what I'm saying. That's, you know, the whole tribal aspect of it is great, and it is a huge part of human development or whatever you want to call it. But at the same time, it's like, this guy's an asshole, you know? Yeah, but he's our asshole because he's in our tribe. You know what I mean? Like, where does that end? Like, how you know what
so
I mean?
So like, it then
where do you abandon it? Lines of your principles and morality, and the loyalty to the tribe begin? Or, you know, how do you rectify that?
You know, I'm sorry, I value fucking loyalty.
Oh, absolutely. Loyalty
far above the supposed individualism that libertarians hold. My idea is this. You know, do libertarians automatically think that, you know, they automatically think since it's collective or it's whatever they're against that it's automatically negative? That is not the case. It is on a case by case basis. Because if you look at it, your patriarch or your matriarch, whomever heads your said clan, is looking at such issues, especially say you on an individual, and saying, well, either you're hurting the clan or you're doing good for the clan, period. But then it comes open to, actually, I can't even finish that statement because I'm too drunk. I really am. It's like, I do want to make a point, but yeah, I lost the point because I'm inebriated.
Wish I had another beer. The other thing too is that, you know, at the end of the day, only individuals act. You know what I mean? So no matter what your tribe is made of, or, you know, the history of it, or its roots, or what it claims to purport, only individuals are going to act in it. So, again, where do you get that individual action when it conflicts with loyalty to that group? How do you, you know what I mean? I think that's probably the problem. What most people have, or a lot of people in libertarianism have a problem with that aspect of tribalism. Well, again, not necessarily like the stuff you're saying, like, hey, I've chosen these people. We've chosen to freely associate. I've chosen them to be a part of my life, you know, or a friend, or, you know, my and fam, whatever the hell you want to call it. You know, and fam is another word for tribe, essentially, but, in a way, you know, but that's all through free association, and that's all individuals choosing to come together. When the tribe decides to, you know, assert its will or you know, over an individual, and that, you know, that conflicts with individual volition and action, then that's the rub. You know, that's the sticking point.
Well, no, it's not. It's not sticking point because
I think it is for a lot of libertarians. I'm just me freewheeling. I don't, you know, this is me throwing stuff out there, man. I'm not as drunk as you, but
No, get it. I understand. But guess what? There is always a choice. Period. Flat out, there is a choice. Yes or no. You agree to said actions, so therefore you will go along with the tribe, or no. And you will face said consequences, but still, you are making that choice. You're not forced,
yeah.
Regardless, even if you're held at gunpoint, okay, still making a choice, period. Now, if you're making the choice out of, you know, self-preservation, that's still a fucking choice. Or if you decide to go against the grain, regardless, even if the gun is held to your head, you're still making the choice. And yet, this is a consequence of said choice.
I'll give you a good example of tribalism gone wrong is the Blue Lives Matter whole spiel or movement. You know, that's a tribe. That's a whole that whole mentality is that, you know, it takes for granted that there actually is something, a blue life. There's no blue life. It's somebody doing a job. You know what I mean? But that whole incestuous mindset where, you know, our blue lives matter. Well, that's almost inherently saying that blue lives matter more because, you know, this is our tribe and we're going to protect it against perceived enemies or what have you. Well, I mean,
the idea is you have to think about from an imperial mindset. Libertarians have to think from two points of view. And in essence, from the culture and everything that's saying that, yes, blue lives do matter more than a person, than a citizen, because that is the culture we're talking about. I posted when I went to Jackfest, I bought two magnets, or, you know, fridge magnets. One was a Bitcoin and one was a cup lock, you know. Shiny badges don't grant extra rights.
Right. Absolutely.
I hung that on my fridge. 3 days later, I came back and saw there was a note on it that said, yes, they do. What? So now
in your home?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
Was it controlled, or was that actually? No, it's my brother.
Okay.
My brother is very authoritarian. So looking at that, I actually sat back instead of using the customary ANCAP rebuke, no, fuck you, cops, blah, blah, you know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I sat back and looked. And yes, from a cop's point of view, they have authority because it is exercised and it is legitimized by government. Now you look back at the free person's side. You know, you have to look at both points of view and see other points of view before you can come to any type of conclusion.
Yeah, but I guess I'm just not as interested in. I know how, like, I have family and friends who are law enforcement. You know, and I talk to them, so I get that, you know, why they feel that way or whatever.
Well, here's the key. Regardless of what you feel, this is reality. This is what you need to do or look at or work around, because this shit's not changing anytime soon. So therefore, you need to find bypasses or workarounds said authority. And it's not legitimate. If you don't believe it's legitimate, okay, it's not legitimate. That still doesn't mean that the person can't beat your ass because Right, but that's the point. No one's looking at the other side and saying, well, this sect of people, regardless of how many, views this to be legitimate. Even if you don't, you need to find subtle ways to subvert the system.
Sell 411. Plug it.
Yes. Sell 411.
Yeah.
Do it. Exactly. I mean, but that's the point. The point is, the only way, at least now, I believe that humans can attain true freedom in the world is by technology.
No, absolutely. I think, yeah, totally.
So anarcho-transhumanism, that is a safe bet, and you should align yourselves with that, because any other variant of anarcho, whatever, you know, whether it be monarchism, capitalism, communism, primitivism, fucking, you know, whatever. It's all bullshit, because it will not get you in the end.
Join the Borg. No, I'm just kidding.
It's time to join the Borg, it's
interesting how, you know, you're right. I actually read an article today about, on Zero Hedge, about the guy was flying from Atlanta to Mexico, and he went through all the normal security screenings and all that, you know, security theater. And when he was on the whatever, the walkway, you know, the gangway to the plane, there was like two DHS employees standing there, and they had a machine, and they were having everyone walk up to it, and it was doing retinal scans to make sure that, you know, your retina or your whatever matched your passport. So, you know, that's kind of scary. I guess they say they do like one outgoing flight a day, and he just happened to be on it. But yeah, retinal scans on and this is not somebody coming into the country. I mean, he was leaving, you know, he's flying from Atlanta to Mexico. So now you have this, they called it like a digital Berlin Wall, basically, you know what I mean? So I thought that was kind of interesting. And so that ties into the whole kind of, like you said, transhumanist. How do you, you know,
you're going to
see more and more the interaction or melding of technology and humans. Well,
So you're talking about transhumanism and DHS checkpoint, but if you remember in Minority Report, there was a black market for false retinas.
Yep, I totally thought of that as soon as I read it. I was like, oh yeah, I remember that scene in Minority Report.
Right. So, in essence, there will always be a workaround. The market, people themselves, will find a way around any type of government intrusion. It doesn't matter what it is. Sure, it may seem like it's stealing your freedom, but guess what? There are people at work who are trying to bypass that government edict or position or whatever to allow themselves more freedom. And it's always going to be that. It will always be a fight.
No, yeah, that's kind of what I thought of when I read about the retinal scans. I thought about, well, how is this just going to escalate it? Like, now people are going to try to find, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to try to find, use the market or their ingenuity and technology, you know, to get around, this new intrusion on individual freedom.
So the idea is the market is based among people. People themselves are the market, so something inevitably will come up, regardless of time. So as a way I saw for the giant or for the huge CCTV presence in say the eastern US, there have been different masks, scarves, or whatnot to help thwart facial recognition.
Yeah.
And the facial recognition is in its infancy. As the technology grows, the bias or the against element, you know, the anti element will be there as well.
No, and I've read that. I've seen where one guy was trying to develop it was some kind of like a jacket or hood that would like not shield you from drones, but or infrared technology or something that would actually, you know, kind of hide you from surveillance. It was kind of interesting, very expensive, and it was like a prototypical stage. But yeah, as that technology keeps ratcheting up, surveillance state keeps ratcheting up, you're going to see more and more of that, I think. So that's an interesting, you know, the whole transhuman aspect of it is kind of an interesting take on that, man. Or, you know, interesting response to it.
Yeah, there was, so we're having more instances of surveillance cameras and whatnot. Well, this gentleman may have been through Rue Lockwell or someone else had developed a mask, which was pretty much like a, what was it? It was a block of some type, but it was all in QR code or internet speech, however you want to interpret that.
Uh-huh.
But the way it was set up was it was a bandana like the Antifa wear and everything else, but it was more set to confuse and throw off security cameras or CCTV mm-hmm. than you know anything else. So, okay, we're early in the tech, and there are already some countermeasures. Okay, as soon as the tech gets more advanced the countermeasures will get, and it's always going to be a count and mouse game.
Yeah, like the leapfrogging. Yeah.
Oh yeah, always. And so, if you want to be a professional activist, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's your life. You know, look into these things. You know, you want to protest yourself against whatever government, whether it be, you know, a Sharia law, fucking straight up Islamic government, or, you know, the neocon fascist right. American government. People are going
patriotically to, correct government.
Right. So do what you can. You want to be the activist, but protect your ass and make sure you do it the right way. That's yep. My two cents.
All right. Absolutely, man. And yeah, obviously things with like Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin,
fuck no, Zipcoin or Zcoin, no. The two big ones, at least I'm pinning my hopes on Bitcoin for sure as the public currency, but the private currency that will forego any type of intrusion would be Monero.
Yeah,
I'm a big Monero pusher, though I don't own any. Bitcoin, BIPCOIN, Bitcoin, because
Bravo, Indio Papa, yeah,
right, coin. You've heard the ads, but still, BIP. The Bitcoin is set up off the CryptoNote, which is the same coding that Monero is. So there are your three cryptocurrencies to do stuff with.
Absolutely.
Monero, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. Bitcoin is the most popular. Right. Cool. But if you want to start doing things more subversively,
discreetly or anonymously, right?
Right. Use a crypto note coin.
Yep.
Actually, I think
ran the gamut. Maybe we kind of tied it back up there. What were you? Okay, what are you going to say? You got more?
No, I did. I'm actually, you know, now I'll admit this: the previous podcast we recorded was absolute horse shit. So we decided to record.
We killed it with fire. That was.
I am much happier with this presentation than I was the Thursday night.
Yeah, it was interesting, man. Well,
it's
all about finding your rhythm and you know, I was probably just off that night. So,
well, I believe that because we were focusing, in my mind, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe we were focusing too much on current events as opposed to an idea waxing philosophical, yeah, maybe expanding absolutely. That idea, you know.
We were throwing a lot on the wall at the last minute and none of it was sticking. So, yeah.
Or all of it was sticking. Now the idea or the problem was what to choose and what stuck. So
yeah.
But this is, yeah, as Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiend said, this among many other BIPOC, that is Bravo India Papa Cot, you know, programs, it's a teaching hospital. So therefore,
absolutely,
we may fuck up, but learn from our mistakes and improve upon them. But make sure you send Dave and I beer money because, well,
because okay, yeah.
we could use an ale, you That's, know.
Yeah, I'll pay for the show, but yeah, if you want to send some beer money, I'm always down for that, man. Speaking of that, dude, what you got anything coming up with your Aces and Ales and all that, or you know, so, Liberty on the Rocks?
Yeah, Liberty on the Rocks. So March is my birthday. March 18th specifically is my birthday. It just so happens that the third Saturday in March falls on the 18th. So therefore, I will not be hosting an Aces and Ales meetup, but there will still be the Aces and Ales West, which is hosted by Jim Jesus. Somewhere
out there in Sin City.
Yeah, it will be the West Aces and Ales on Tenaya. It's like Tenaya and Cheyenne. If you're in Vegas, just Google it. But it will be held on the 20th of March.
All right. No green beer at that one, right? it's around St. Patty's Day.
No, that is about 3 days off St. Patty's Day. So green beer, probably not.
I don't drink green beer.
I've done it once. I did it once in a huge, St. Patty's Day Fest in Tucson.
If you were down there, yeah, totally. But
no real Irish people and a whole bunch of drunk college kids claiming to be Irish. And it's just a cluster.
Everyone's Irish on St. Patty's Day, man. Come on.
That is the most racist fucking.
Yeah. Well, I don't even know I don't think I have any Irish in me, but my last name's kind of. I think it's Scottish, so I'm a close cousin.
But you're not Irish.
No, but I'm not Irish, so.
Right. So no Irish people, myself included, should ever partake in St. Paddy's Day. One, it's an American-made holiday based on a Catholic man who loved to sacrifice pagans. Two, really?
And here I just thought he drove all the snakes out.
Well, what were the snakes? The snakes were the pagans. That were in. Right. Mm-hmm. Everything goes back to being anti-pagan. So,
plus, it's cultural appropriation.
What is
if you're I know. I'm joking. If you're not Irish and you're celebrating St. Patrick's Day, dude, you're appropriating my culture.
You know, I will happily say I will gladly appropriate Irish culture as opposed to, African culture because, well, one, I'm not black. Two, I don't care.
How do you know, man? You might have some, you know, have you done your DNA sequence?
Even
George W. Bush and Obama were like distant cousins, I think.
Even if I have 0.01% African, okay. I'm still not black. I don't share their culture. So therefore, I have nothing in common with them. Period.
Yeah. Let's just worry about St. Patty's Day right now. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So March 20th.
Yeah. Check it out. If anyone's in the Las Vegas area, it is on the northwest side of town, Cheyenne Antonia, Aces and Ales Gastropub. Check it out.
All right. Well, it's fun, man. I talked about a lot of nerdy stuff. I love it. No, and a lot of cool stuff, too. So let's tie it up.
Trust me. This was better than Thursday's, bar none.
I flushed that one. Because I had to reformat my SD card anyway to fit this one on there. And I'm like, I thought about downloading it. And I'm just like, nah. Let's just kill it. Send it down the memory hole.
I thank you for that because that was atrocious. It really was.
All right. Well, onwards and upwards, man, a better thing. So,
Definitely. So real quick, I'm going to kind of tie this or bring it back to the sci-fi aspect. David, you need to watch The Expanse season 2.
I know, dude. I'm actually kind of pissed because I've seen some spoilers on Face Beast. And I'm like, really? You know, we're relating to main characters. And I'm like,
right.
Come on, man.
Well, as much as I love The Expanse, it is a sci-fi original series, and there's some bad acting in there, especially in the second season. Well, no, in the second season, dealing with the UN, whoever that chick is who portrays the Indian head of the UN or whatever.
She's like an Iranian actress or something is what I was
reading. If she is.
But yeah.
Regardless, I think her acting is probably the worst in the entire fucking series. She is less believable than anyone else, period.
I wonder if it's because I swear I've seen her in something else, but I can't remember what it was.
This is the only thing I've actually ever seen her in. But if you go back, so the fifth episode dropped on Wednesday, sixth episode's coming this next Wednesday. My suggestion is on your days off, maybe kind of marathon.
Binge it.
Binge season 2 because it's only 5 episodes in and it's all good. It's all fucking excellent.
No, I love it, dude.
With the exception of that chick who heads the UN or is something for the UN, she is a weak link. She really is.
Yeah.
But my point of view.
Yeah. No.
I don't know if it's her
character and the writing. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it focuses more on her this season. Like she was kind of prominently featured in the earlier episodes, but towards the later half of season 1, she kind of, you know, had a lesser role. So I'll check it out.
Well, right, but okay. So let me know what you think of season 2 because she has more of a prominent role in season 2, and then to me it feels lacking. But you may disagree. So that we can talk about if you binge that, we will definitely talk about The Expanse next week.
All right, man, and then maybe we can talk about Oh shit! When does Logan come out? you're into comic. You're kind of into comic books,
absolutely.
Shit, right? What's your take on Logan so far?
You know, I'm interested in what they do with it. I mean, they're doing the old man Logan storyline,
yeah.
And so there's a lot of stuff into that. Had some people ask me because I'm one of the better well known Marvel fans at my warehouse. So they asked me, you know, what do you think of Logan? What do you think of the chick? Who is she? I'm like, well, she's not X-23. If she's claiming to be his daughter, then she would be half Japanese. But she's not. So they're kind of tweaking the old man Logan storyline.
Well, I wonder if they're just saying she's his daughter or to hide the clone aspect of it.
She had claws, so therefore good chance she's X-23.
Right.
Now it's just how they play it. I mean, it could be a complete fuck up because Fox has been known to do some really
They've butchered it. They've gotten better with the first Wolverine Origins was horrible. But they got better going down.
I think Fox has always been shit.
Well, no, I'm not that great, but the Wolverine movies have gotten progressively better, I think. Not great, but better as they've gone along. The first one was horrible.
Well, Yeah, and it's interesting to see because Patrick Stewart, he's an older gentleman. You know, you can definitely tell he's aging. And yeah. It's interesting to see what they do with him and Professor X. So,
from what I read, it's this is going to be his last one.
Yeah, it is. It's his last one. It is, what's his name's last one? Like Hugh Jackman. Yeah, so after this, I mean, so this is going to be an iconic movie.
Yeah.
So I'm hope because, you know, actors are stopping their roles. So I'm hoping, goddess, am I hoping that it's fucking great.
Cool, man. But so let's do a, little, if we both wind up seeing it before the next show, we'll do the Expanse and a Logan review. A little teaser for you out there
Actually, podcast land. So Friday, I'm probably going to see it Saturday. So if we do, let's do the Expanse and then the Logan review and we'll be.
Yeah, man. And we can talk more about transhumanism because that was kind of, I like that. I don't, oh, not absolutely. Something I've really, you know, explored a lot. So, but with some of the stuff that's popping up, dude, I think it's kind of cool.
Well,
so.
even kind of kicking back to the role-playing games. The role-playing games like Rift, Cyberpunk, and whatnot, they've explored incidents or the more transhumanistic aspect of it and then, you know, however your character dealt with it. But they were some of the first, at least in pop culture.
Right on. We should probably eventually talk about how horrible Trump is because I always bash the left, but and I always will because they're
– why?
I don't want to be seen as giving Trump and the right as a pass. So
it's not even that. It's like I felt okay. So I barely looked. I'm an avid Zero Hedge reader, but I'll be honest. I hardly read anything from Zero Hedge this weekend. I felt great, absolutely great.
Yeah.
If you read, the more you read the news, the more it's going to depress you and think like suicidal thoughts or the end of times, whatever. Just don't do it. Fuck Trump. He got in there because he was able to manipulate a bunch of people. So what? It's the same thing as anyone else.
Well, I heard an interesting theory that I'd like to just explore a little more maybe next time is that he's kind of a patsy with a lot of the financial bubbles that are, you know, have been in the making for a long time, that he's kind of going to be the fall guy for that, which I'm not expressing sympathy for him at all, but that's kind of an interesting theory is that, you know, we could get a little conspiracy next time, maybe. We'll see.
Okay, cool. Because, yeah, I have opinions to that theory. I've heard it, so.
I knew you would, man. All right, buddy. All right, we ran long, so let's wrap this up. Baron, thank you for being on, man. Always fucking interesting, dude. You always bring an energy and a, you know, willingness to skull stomp sacred cows, which I enjoy, so.
Oh, I crack those skulls open easily.
And drink the blood of my enemies from them. And on that high note, this has been the Zombies Government and UZGY podcast. Check us out, obviously, on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcatchers. I gotta make some effort to get my podcast into the Google Store proper. Facebook, Facebeast, iTunes, or Twitter, all that. So, and look up Baron stuff to the Freedom on, or Liberty on the Rocks. Sorry, man.
Liberty on the Rocks, the Lowbirds podcast, where I'm a guest of course. As well. So,
all right, my man. We'll see ya.
All right, peace.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists who think you need a government permission slip for everything? Everything you do is an A to B conversation, and the government should see their way out of it. Create true free markets by adopting the BIPCOT No Government License. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows use or modification of any product, service, or software except by governments or government agents. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.